Nashtapayesha Padeshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Nashtaki. A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 8, verses 26 through perhaps 29. So verse 26, Janmashaya Shuddha Shibir Etamana Madapuman Naivarhatya Pitatum Vai Tvamakinshanagacharam. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. Mukam karati vachalam bangam langhayate girim yakipantam ham bande shikurum dinatavinam om gyana timnandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshya militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So yesterday we heard about how Kunti was appreciating Krishna's protection of her. What are some of the things that were on her list that Krishna protected Kunti and her sons and Draupadi from? What were some of the things? Yes. Poison cake. Yes. House of lack. Yeah. Cannibals. Yes. Yeah, that's what he said. Yes? Vicious assembly. Battlefield of Kurukshetra. So, what? Exile in the forest. Yes? Weapons. Oh, Ashwatthama, right, okay, yes. Weapons of Ashwatthama, good. So these are the list. And then after thanking Krishna for protecting her from all the dangers, what does she do? She says, give me more, more danger. I want more problems. Nobody says that in this world. Give me more problems. Everybody's trying to avoid problems and to increase their happiness. But Kunti, she's saying, give me more danger, give me calamity, not just danger, calamities. Who wants calamities? Nobody. Nobody wants calamities. So she wants more. And today we're going to find out why. She's going to give her reasons why she wants more. We had so many reasons yesterday how we should respond to dangerous situations and how to preach to people. Actually, I have a picture here which I forgot to show you yesterday. But it's an interesting picture. Here's a devotee. He's chanting. He's going on a japa walk, and it's in a war-torn place, somewhere in Georgia, near Russia. So here, this devotee, he's chanting japa, and in the midst of destruction. You know this devotee? Yes. You're from there. Were you there in this place? Oh, good. Yeah, so you know this devotee. He must be a very sincere devotee, huh? He was preaching in this place here. Oh, what's his name? Mathura? Oh, Bharadwaj. Bharadwaj, okay. This is Bharadwaj Prabhu? Oh, Makara, what? Mayuratwaj. Mayuratwaj. Okay, this is Mayuratwaj Prabhu. He's chanting japa in the midst of the war here. See, everything is destroyed, the railroad, the houses, everything, electric wires. Just imagine living in a place like this and preaching in a place like this. Unimaginable for us, actually. We're not... Yes? This is in near Russia. It's called Yeah, I can't even pronounce it. Okay. That's where it is. Cheshnya. Yes, yes. Well, probably food for life is big in a place like that. One person was killed, one devotee. Yeah, so it's not easy to preach like that in a place like that. So these are examples of devotees even today who are living in this philosophy that Kunti is preaching. There's an example right there. This devotee, he's preaching in this place like this. So Kunti, what was their danger? They were in the forest. Their kingdom was taken away from them completely. And so now, in these next two verses, she's going to tell us why it's nice if your kingdom, if everything is taken away from you. Why this is a good position to be in spiritual life. So at the end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the principle of life should be to decrease the degree of material intoxication, which leads one to be more and more illusioned about the aim of life. Prabhupada tells a story about there was a rich man, and he had, his wife was sick, and the wife's maidservant was sick. Both of them were sick, they had fever. So he called the doctor. And the doctor came, and he said, oh, your wife is not very serious. Just minor fever, 99 as we say in the West, or maybe 37 as you say here, centigrade. And your maidservant, she's very sick. She has 104. And so when the wife heard that, she said, why she has 104? I only have 99. I should have 104, and she should have 99. So this is how the materialistic people think. They are increasing their opulences in this world, but actually it's the fever of modern civilization. I should have more money. I should. No, but this is the thing that actually pulls us down to the bottom of the material ocean. The more opulence, the more things that we have in this world, if we don't use them for Krishna, then they will simply increase the fever of our intoxication. These things, they're like intoxication. Money, the things are named. What is it named in this verse? What are the four things that intoxicate us? Money, what else? High parentage, beauty, education, these four. So these four are very intoxicating. If you have these things, then you think, yes, I'm a very important person. I have something. This is my shelter. I can be somebody in this world. So the opposite of this is akinchana. What does akinchana mean? This is a Sanskrit word that is used in this verse and the next verse. Akinchana. Immaterially impoverished. Right. Na kinchana. Kinshana means something, I have something. But akinshana means nothing, I have nothing in this world. So, or nothing belongs to me. There's two ways to understand akinshana. You may have something, but it's not yours, it's Krishna's. So akinshana means either you have nothing, literally. As we see, sometimes I sit here and chant in the samadhi, and I see people come in with all of their possessions. They've got a lota, or a tiffin for milk, and they've got sometimes a plastic bag with a blanket or a gumsha in it, and that's all their possessions. That's all they have. And a stick, usually a stick. A stick, a gumsha, the clothes that are on their back, and sometimes a blanket. So this is akinshana. But also there's another type of akinshana, and that means nothing belongs to me. So we'll discuss both of these kinds. In the purport and the next verse, Prabhupada says, a living being is finished as soon as there is nothing to possess. So here we see in this world that these four things, there are many things very valuable for people in this world, but these are four of them. So Chanaka Pandit, there's a proverb, he has said, avidvam jivanam shunyam. One who is not educated, his life is zero. Then he says, disha shunyam abandava. If you are going to some foreign country, if there is no friend and no devata or temple, then it is useless. And then he says, putra hinam grihashunyam. If you're married and you don't have a child, then that's zero. And then he says, sarva shunya daritrata. And if you're poor, everything's zero. Your education zero, your house is zero, your children, everything. Because you have no money. Your vidya, nobody will care for you. But, so for materialistic people, this is true. This is how they view the world. They think like this. But for the spiritualist, these assets can actually be obstacles for progress. They can be obstacles. So Srila Prabhupada says that impoverishment is a good sign, as much as the falling of a temperature is a good sign. So we shouldn't feel so bad if it happens to us. So therefore, Kunti, here she's saying, Tvam akinshana gocharam, that if you are free from this intoxication, then this is a very good qualification. Because people, they are depending on these things as shelters in this world. And so, because they have these things as shelters, they don't depend on Krishna. So what I would like to do just now is have a list of all the other shelters that people think they have in this world. Would you like to come in? Yes. You already have one? Besides, of course, we can put down these shelters also. What do you say? I forgot your name already. Yes? Good health. Okay, good health. Your body. Your body is a shelter. Your body, good, strong body, healthy body. This is shelter, actually. Yes?
Society.
Society. Okay? Society will certainly protect me. And they will supply all my emotional needs. Yes?
Friends,
same thing. Because we, yes? Government, yes. Good government, yes. This is a shelter. Relatives, yes. Especially in India. So many relatives everybody has. Yes? Green card. Okay, we're getting very specific here. Yes? On this side, you said something?
Job.
Job is shelter, yes. That's what everyone in the airline industry was thinking, oh, such a good industry. Until the hijacking occurred in America, 100,000 people immediately lost their jobs. What's that?
Life insurance.
Life insurance, okay, in case you die. This is a very good shelter. Yes?
Passport.
Yeah, if you're in India long enough, then you realize you can be lost at any moment. Yes? Yes, it will take us away from the Dham. So this is another, a different shelter. Yes?
Fame.
Fame. Yeah, if you're famous, you think you can do anything, really. Actually, intoxication is a shelter. Although these are all forms of intoxication, but actual intoxication has another meaning. Yes? Okay, that means sentimental comfort, means emotional satisfaction. Oh, yeah, okay.
And
they don't give you the truth. They're afraid to tell you the truth. They just want to make, it's just something to pacify you for the moment. Yes. Credit cards. Okay. Credit cards. These are shelters. Yes.
Sex life.
Sex life. Right. Okay. If everything else fails, then we've still got that. Okay. What's that?
Demigods.
Okay. Yes. This is for the pious people in India. Yes. Food. Okay. Yes. TV. Oh, yeah. We forgot. I was reading in Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's latest book, Spiritual Warrior. He said there's a prediction in the Islamic religion that there will be a one-eyed monster that controls everyone's house. And so that was a prediction of many thousands of years ago. So some people interpret that as the TV is the one-eyed monster that has taken control of everyone's house. Yes. Sleep. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Okay. Video games for my son. Yes.
Spiritual ones.
Okay. Spiritual. Holy name. Now we're. But actually, this was other shelters. Okay, why not be positive? Spiritual? Internet. This is material now. Don't put it under spiritual. Could be. Yeah, spiritual. Okay, yeah, okay, holy name. We've got to, put a box around that. Because it's not in the same category. It's a spiritual. These are true shelters. Okay, we should do that. We should do true shelters. Since we're doing false shelters, why not do true shelters? We have enough false? Yes? Okay, we're on, flip the page, and then we'll do true. True shelters. Holy name, Srimad Bhagavatam. What to take shelter of in this crazy age of Kali? Prasadam. Yes.
Holy Dham.
Wait, a writer has to catch up now. Prasadam, Holy Dham. Sadhana. Yes. Sadhu Sangha. Okay. Actually, I was reading, go ahead. Deities. Yes. Spiritual Master. Have we? Shri Prabhupada? Yes. I was reading in the 16th chapter of the first canto, and it was talking about how Kali came into this world, and Parikshit was trying to counteract Kali. And Parikshit actually did it. And Shri Prabhupada, in the purport, he was giving a plan how to counteract Kali even now, what the government should do. And there were 5 points. On one of the points, 5 points were there, was all the 5 most potent forms of devotional service. But he said it in a different way. He was saying, he said, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, kirtan, and then some of them, he said, deity worship was, he put it down as doing all your work for the Supreme Lord, karmarpanam. So it was very interesting, Prabhupada's plan. Of course, outlawing all the slaughterhouses. This was also there. Okay, more spiritual shelters. Kirtan. Okay, we have that? Kirtan, holy name? Okay, yes, kirtan. Or japa.
Prayer.
Okay, all the 9 forms, yes? Parikrama. Yes, to counteract. What's that? Preaching programs. Yes, like if anybody was there last night at Chibhuvanath's ceremony. There was beautiful videos there of how he was preaching all over Africa and doing kirtan, prasad distribution. So this was a way, this was a true shelter for people. Okay, thank you. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, it gives some of these shelters. It says, Deha Patya Kala Tradishu. Just the same things we were saying here. Your body, your relatives, your kids. People think that I will depend on these things and they will protect me from death. My society, my government, surely my government will protect me from death. But in America, that was just proven that what could the government do? Someone hijacks American planes, what are they supposed to do? So this is the thing. They will not help you because they also have to die. You have to find somebody who is infallible, who doesn't die. And then you can actually be protected. So Srila Prabhupada, he was talking about this. He said, I used to have a father, and he was protecting me. He says, but now they're all gone. And all I have left now is a list of names. That's all I have. My protection. A list of names. And so someday it'll be like that for us. And as we get older, we see how our parents are dying. And so then they cannot protect us. They cannot give us protection. So therefore, the Vedic civilization, at a certain stage of life, you voluntarily give up all this entanglement in grihastha life and all these things. And you reduce the fever of material existence. So Prabhupada was talking about himself when he was asked to take sannyas. First he had a dream. His spiritual master came to him. And Srila Prabhupada said, oh no, I have to give up my family and become sannyas. This is horrible. That's what he said. He said this was his first reaction. So actually, after he did it, he found, oh, this is very nice. Now I lost 5 children and I gained thousands. So this is a thing. Now you do something, you give up something for Krishna and you gain so much. You gain so much more. So as long as we think that, I've made these different arrangements for my protection, then that's not a kinshana. So Prabhupada says we have to think, I have no other protection except Krishna. He's the only one. So, and Krishna can only be understood by someone who has this surrender. So I would like to read something here. This is from a purport of Bhagavatam. Here this explains why devotees in distress are more fortunate than those in opulence. Srila Prabhupada is going to give us his explanation. Why it's very good to be in a distressed condition. So we know, we hear from Bhagavad Gita what happens to a devotee. If a devotee falls down in this life, if he doesn't finish devotional service, what does Bhagavad Gita say? What happens to him in his next life? Yes? Pious family, okay. Right. Yes? Or yogis, yeah. Okay. Or rich family. So Prabhupada's talking about a devotee who is born in a rich family is not as fortunate as one who is chastised by the Lord and put into a position seemingly of helplessness. So we see that not all our devotees are born in rich families, the ones who become devotees in this life. That some of them are born in very distressed conditions of life. So Prabhupada says that they're more fortunate than the ones who are born in rich families. His devotee who becomes helpless by the will of the Lord is more fortunate because the devotees born in a good family may forget the lotus feet of the Lord because they have so much opulence. But a devotee who is put into a forlorn condition, he swiftly returns to the lotus feet of the Lord, thinking himself helpless all around. So if you're in this very helpless condition, then if you're pious, then very quickly you will come back to Krishna. So if you were a devotee in your last life and you're put into this helpless condition, then your natural response will be to go to Krishna. So Prabhupada was giving a warning also. He was in Mayapur in 1974 and he was speaking, therefore I want this book distribution so much. He says, I don't want so much to build temples, but I want to distribute books. Just like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati told him that I would just like to take apart these temples and sell them and print books. That this is the most important thing. So Prabhupada said that if we get attached to the nice place that we're living and to the opulence, then we won't realize Krishna. Only that opulence will be realized, but we won't realize Krishna. So he said he was giving a warning that we should be very, very careful. And he gave two examples of Akinshana. He said there's two kinds of Akinshana. One was Gaurakishore Das Babaji. He had nothing. He was living just in a latrine or just on the bank of the Ganga. So he was one type of Akinshana. And his disciple, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, was another type of Akinshana. And he had 64 temples. Somebody told me a story. He used to go on a luxury boat up and down the Ganga, preaching to the richest people in Calcutta. So this was renunciation of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, that he was using everything, Yukta Vairagya, using everything in Krishna's service. He rode in a car. This was unheard of for a sannyasi. Srila Prabhupada rode in airplanes. So this was Yukta Vairagya. Now Srila Prabhupada was also a Akinshana. In 1977, he went to Bhuvaneshwar. And that time, I was there also. I visited, not when Prabhupada was there, but I visited Bhuvaneshwar when it was just a hut, one hut, one mud hut. And there was two rooms in it. So my husband and I, we were in one room, and he wasn't a Maharaj then. Gaurgovinda, he was in the other room. So when Prabhupada was going to go there in 1977, he was supposed to lay the cornerstone of the new temple. So they arranged a very nice place for Prabhupada to stay in the guest house, government guest house. And they told Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada at once rejected this. He said, no, I will only stay with where my disciple Gaurgovinda has built a nice mud hut for me. And he stayed there for 17 days, and he laid the cornerstone of the temple. And that place was all snakes, scorpions, mosquitoes, all kinds of, and it was dacoits in the middle of nowhere. It was a really very difficult place, dangerous place, jungle, as they say in India, it's jungle. So Vrindavan used to be jungle too when I first came here. So Prabhupada's message to us is that if you want to realize Krishna, then you have to become a Akinshana. You may have things, that's okay. It's not that you go and, okay, now go out and sell all your things and become a Akinshana. You can have things, but it's for Krishna. It's not for you. It's not for your use. So this is the message Kunti is also giving us here. And in verse 27, we will see more. She's saying here about Akinshana. So let's say the verse. Namo Akinshana Vittaya Nivitta Gunavittaye Atma Ramaya Shantaya Kaivalya Pateye Namaha. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. My obeisances are unto you, who are the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore, you are the most gentle and are master of the monists. So the first reason she gave in the last verse, why you should be a Kinshana, is that because all these possessions can be an obstacle. You become intoxicated by it, and you forget Krishna. Or you cannot feelingly chant the holy name, as Prabhupada said in the purport. If you're in a very comfortable, satisfied position, it's not as easy to chant as when you're in a difficult position. Then you chant very feelingly, oh, Krishna, I need your help. I must, please help me. If you are in an accident, like one time I was in a car accident, and when the car was out of control, we were chanting. It was our best chanting that we ever had, because we didn't know if we were going to live or die. So it could have been our last chanting. So when you're in that position, then you tend to very feelingly chant the holy name of Krishna. Like your death is coming, and all you have is the holy name. There's nothing you can do. You have no control over your life. So in this verse, she's telling us another reason why you should be a Kinshana. Because Krishna is the property of one who is a Kinshana. When you lose everything in this world, you gain Krishna. Because Krishna, we will see here in this verse, that Krishna is very pleased with his devotee who gives up everything for him. In fact, the gopis, they gave up everything for Krishna, and Krishna said, I can't repay you. He says, how can I repay you? There's nothing I can do. So Krishna reciprocates according to our level of dependence on him. Here in the purport, in the first paragraph, in the middle, Srila Prabhupada explains the meaning of Kinshana. Kinshana means one who has nothing to give materially. Here's another definition. You have nothing to give to anybody that's material. A factual devotee or mahatma does not give anything material to anyone because he has already left all material assets. He can, however, deliver the supreme asset, namely personality of Godhead, because he is the only property of a factual devotee. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Krishna Shetomar, Krishna Diti Paro. You have Krishna and you can give Krishna. You have the power to give Krishna. Krishna is yours. So Krishna, Akinshana Vita, not only the only property of devotee, the only solace for one who has lost everything material. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is described, Lord Krishna, he describes there's one kind of foolish devotee. This foolish devotee, two kinds actually. They come to Krishna and they have material desires also. They want either some material benefit or liberation, karmi and jnani. And so he said, they come to me, they worship me. He said, but I am not such a fool. I'm not going to give this devotee this materialistic things. It's poison, bisha. Why should I give him bishai? Just like a mother. If a mother sees her child, the small child, the nature is to just put everything in the mouth. This is the nature of this baby. Because the mouth is how he learns. Everything, he only knows to taste and to eat. It's anamoya. So whatever he gets, he puts in his mouth. So if the mother sees some poison sitting, and there's a bottle of poison or medicine that's poisonous, is she going to let that baby put it in her mouth? No. So Krishna's the same way. He sees us going for the poison, this material enjoyment. He says, no, don't put that in your mouth. I'll give you something better. So what he does, instead of giving us poison, he gives us the nectar of his lotus feet, and we forget all about material enjoyment. So this is what it is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita. But sometimes we don't understand when these things happen to us, when things get taken away. Just like yesterday, Krishna always gives me nice realizations while I'm teaching the same things. So I didn't lose everything, but I lost my shoes, which happens a lot around here. And I was attached to those shoes because I have bad feet, and they were good for my feet. And I was thinking, oh, why did this happen to me? It was the second time in 1 week. And so these things happen, and then when it happens, you see, what's your reaction? So, how much are you living this philosophy? And that was just my shoes. Now, what happened if everything was taken away? So how, you know, how do we feel when these things happen? So actually it happened to Kunti and the Pandavas. Everything was taken away. Their honor was taken away. Draupadi's honor, their kingdom, everything was taken. So Yudhisthira Maharaj asked Krishna. He said, Krishna, listen, we're completely dependent on you, but we're suffering so much. This was when they were in the forest, and Krishna came to visit them. Our kingdom's been taken away, our wife's been insulted, and they tried to burn us. How can this be so? So Krishna said, yasyaham anagrinami kadishe tatanam shanai, that, yes, that is my business. If I especially favor someone, I take away all his sources of income and place him into great difficulty. So this is only special favor, so don't worry. It's only if you're a special devotee, Krishna does this. You're just ordinary devotee, you don't have to worry about it. So if you're a special devotee, watch out. Krishna can take everything away from you and make you a pure devotee before you know it. So Prabhupada said, in this way, Krishna is very dangerous. Prabhupada said, I have experience, personal experience. The astrologer told me that I should have been as rich as Birla, who's one of the richest men in India, when I was 25 years old, and my guru ordered me to preach. And so I was thinking, okay, I'll just make some money, I'll make a very big business, and I'll use this money to finance the preaching. Prabhupada was thinking like that, he said. But what happened, he was successful in his business, but then all of a sudden, the business failed, it was taken away, his servant stole it. And then Prabhupada said, this is the realization he had. He said that when Krishna took everything away, I approached Krishna saying, you are the only shelter. So that was Prabhupada's realization when everything was taken away from him. So this is a very difficult realization for us. If we lose our material opulences, it's not a loss if it's for Krishna's sake. For Krishna's sake, we can lose it. Anyway, it could be our destiny to lose it anyway. So what's the need of being upset about it? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his only desire is to have Krishna. He says, there's a prayer, sorry, Narottam Das Thakur. Haha Prabhu Nandasuta Vishabhanasuta Juta Korona Korohoi Bar, that everything you can take, but just don't kick me away from your lotus feet. This is what I want. I want to have you. I have nothing but you. So someone who understands this, this is very nice, that Krishna is my only wealth. He's the only thing I have. And when you accept Krishna, then you can be happy. Krishna is Atmarama, it says right here in this verse. He's completely happy, he's completely satisfied. So if you have only Krishna as your asset, you can also be Atmarama, you can be completely satisfied. That's what Kunti is saying here in this verse. And why is that? Because Krishna gives himself to his devotee. You purchase Krishna when you do this. And Srila Prabhupada said that, so if you go to the spiritual world, then you're completely free from anxiety. Just like Krishna, he's free from anxiety. He said, but in the spiritual world, devotees are more free from anxiety than Krishna. Because there are always, when they see some danger, of course in the spiritual world there's no danger, but in Gokula there is danger, demons come. So when they see some danger, they say, oh, Krishna is here. We will just go to Krishna. He'll protect us. But Krishna sometimes has anxiety because he has to think, okay, how am I going to protect my devotees? So this is the nature of the spiritual world. So this we can attain. And Srila Prabhupada, he explains how Krishna feels about his devotees. This was in ninth canto. Durvasa Muni, he offended Maharaj Ambarish. Durvasa Muni, for those of you who don't know, I think everybody knows probably. He was a great yogi, and he offended a devotee who was a king. He thought, oh, I'm a Brahmin, I'm a yogi. So he just didn't take any notice of Ambarish Maharaj, who was a great devotee. He committed an offense, and then he had to run for his life. And finally, when he came to Vishnu, Vishnu said, I'm completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I'm not at all independent, because my devotees are free from all material desires, I sit in the core of their hearts. And what to speak of my devotees, even those who are devotees of my devotees, they are very dear to me. So therefore, to become a devotee, that's the highest thing, and to have only Krishna. So Kunti, that's what she's saying here. She's trying to teach us that it's all right if you lose material. That's why she's praying, give me calamities. Take away my kingdom again and again, so I can have you, so I can have Krishna. And it was a fact. Every time she was in trouble, Krishna came. And then they got their kingdom, Krishna's going. Saying goodbye. Okay, you got your kingdom, you're okay. Don't need me anymore. Going back to Dwarka. So this was the scene here. So now, we'll do a little exercise again. You can take a piece of scrap paper, just a little corner of your paper. Any paper? I'll ask you a question. Now this is going to be a one-word answer. One word. And then after that we'll have a sentence. A one word. The question is, suppose Krishna took everything away from you. You just found out after you got out of this class, you've lost everything, whatever you had. What's your first reaction? In one word. What will be your first reaction? Krishna. And then after that, we'll get into the deeper reactions. This is just your first reaction. Write it down and then we'll ask you. One word. You can be honest if you can. It's nice. Okay, one word. Yes, anybody would like to tell us? Yes? Lost, you're lost. Okay? Yes? Help. Okay? Oh no. Yes? How interesting. Oh, here we have a Gyani, detached from the world. Yes? Oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay, when in doubt, chant Hare Krishna. Yes? Bhakti Swami. Relief. Yeah, real true brahmachari. Someone told me in Mayapur when the huge flood came, the reaction of the brahmacharis was to jump off the wall and go swimming, and the reaction of the grihasthas was to get in their boats and try to get all their possessions up to the temple. So here we see. Yes. Okay. Chaste wife. Yes. Yeah, okay, she still has her husband. She didn't lose her husband. Everything, well, almost everything. What if you lost your husband? Okay, that's all right. Don't worry about it. I don't want to put you in anxiety. Yeah, Rukmavati? Just see. That's an interesting reaction. Vishakpriya? Okay, she's ready to die. Yes? Full surrender, okay? This is Vrindavan, remember. You might be tested. Whatever you say here will be held against you. Who did I not ask? Nari, did I ask? Help, yes. Oh, no. Yes. Oh, you already said. It's interesting. Yeah. Who else? Who did I miss? Yes? Reality. Did you say? Jai. Somebody have already realized the true truth about life. It's only suffering, and the more you have, the more suffering you have. Okay, who else is here? Bhakta Leopold? Yes? Oh. Very honest reaction. Did you tell me, Vanamali? Oh yeah, chanting. Okay, very nice. Yes? I don't know your name. You say, oh no. Okay. So we're very honest here with our... Yes? Yeah, I know. It's just something, you know, like right now. I mean, if you get in the real situation, of course there's your first reaction. Now I'm going to ask you for your second reaction. Now you've had time to think about it and get your wits collected, maybe. So the next thing I'll ask you is, so now you're in this position, you've lost everything. Now you have one sentence, and you can write a prayer to Krishna. Now you have a chance to pray. What do you want? Yes. Using or losing? Losing. Yeah, all other shelters. Whatever you think, what it means to you to lose everything. Her service, her husband, her maintenance, everything. So what it means to you to lose everything, I'll just say that. I won't be very that specific. But whatever it means to you, to the person. Oh, you're not going to lose your Krishna consciousness. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to lose that. Okay, that's good. Okay. Yeah, so now you're actually realizing why these things are lost. So that's very good. So now you've lost everything. Now you get a chance to pray to Krishna. So what do you pray for in one sentence? Yes. Okay. I'll have everybody write it down. And then you can, if you like, you can share it with us. If you like, you don't have, if you don't like, you don't have to. But just write it down because some people need to write. And what will be your prayer? You have a little time to think about it. Everybody finished? Okay, we'll start. And those who need to continue writing can. Anybody like to tell us? Nari? Okay, Krishna, how can I serve you? That's a nice prayer. Yes? You had some? Okay, Krishna, not my will, but thy will be done. These are very nice. Yes, Panamali? Okay. So you pray that you can fulfill the desire of spiritual master. Yes? Okay. You can do whatever you want with me, Krishna, but always keep me in association of devotees. That's all I want. Very nice prayer. Amrita? Please show me the way you want me to go, Krishna. Okay. Yes, Rukmavati? Okay, please show me your inconceivable plan and give me the strength to continue in your devotional service. Yes, Prabhu? No, okay. You have something? Service. Okay, that's good. Bhakta Swini? Okay, you accept it as mercy and please guide me how I should act. Yes? So that you can what? Understand your plan. So he's accepting it as bad karma, and please give me courage and mercy so I can understand your plan. What's your name? I forgot. Vrindadevi, yes. Okay, so she's saying, now I'm yours, so you please be mine. I know one time I lost all my friends, and I said, okay, you took all my friends away, so now you have to be my friend. Yes? Please guide me. Yes. Okay, so this is... Did I ask you? Okay, please give me intelligence to know what is my next step. Because it's quite a change. Actually, in Hitopadesh, it says that you're the same person. If all your wealth is taken away, you're the same person, but actually you're not. It's quite a big difference between before and after. Quite a big difference if all your wealth is taken. So what is that difference? Actually, in Bhagavad Gita, we hear the examples of the pure devotees, happiness and distress, this and that. It doesn't make any difference to them. So this is a very high standard to get to. I'll stop here for a few minutes. Do we have any questions or comments? Yes. Akinchana. Akinchana Gochana.
We're very quick when discussing this.
Yeah, right. Well, actually, in the purport, there's a story by Sanatana Goswami, about Sanatana Goswami, where he has this touchstone. So he was... It's a very interesting question that could be raised about this touchstone. Because, I mean, if you look at the principle of Yukta Vairagya, he shouldn't have thrown it in the garbage can. He shouldn't have thrown it into the garbage. Here's Sanatana Goswami, and he's a great acharya. He could have used that Chintamani touchstone to build a very nice temple, to print lots of books. He could have used it in Krishna's service. Why didn't he use it in Krishna's service? Prabhupada made actually a point in the purport why he didn't do it. Why didn't he follow this principle of Yukta Vairagya? Yes? To what? Yes. Yes. The holy name is most important. And also Prabhupada made a point in this purport, if I can find it. He said that, this specific example is given for the neophyte devotees just to convince them that material hankerings and spiritual advancement go ill together. So it's according to your level of advancement that how you should apply the principle. If you're an Uttama Adhikari, then obviously it's not a problem. You see everything is one and everything is Krishna. So here, Sanatana Goswami, he was an Uttama Adhikari, but he was acting in a lower position just to teach the neophyte devotees. So for a neophyte devotee, actually it would be very difficult for you to practice this Yukta Vairagya. It's better if you practice Vairagya. So therefore Brahmacharya. That's why we have the system. The Vedic system is first Brahmacharya. You practice renunciation up until the age of 25. And then you get married if necessary, and then you practice grihastha life. And that's the time when you can try and apply the principle of Yukta Vairagya more. Then vanaprastha, again you renounce. And you perform austerities. And then sannyas, complete renunciation. But of course the Vaishnava sannyasis, they also are supposed to apply this principle of Yukta Vairagya. But sometimes it does get out of hand for devotees. So this is the question. How do we know when we're properly applying this Yukta Vairagya? So Srila Prabhupada, he would say that we should test ourselves. We should test ourselves. If we're becoming attached to the thing that we're using, if our attachment for the thing is growing, then it's improper renunciation. It's improper application of the principle. And if we're becoming detached, and we're getting a taste, more of a taste for chanting and hearing and preaching, then we're doing it properly. So we have to be very honest. Honesty is the key here. We have to be honest with ourselves. The preacher, the Madhyama Adhikari, he has more leeway to use this principle of Yukta Vairagya because he must engage people, he must engage wealth, he must engage so many things in Krishna's service. But the preacher, one who is not completely free from anarthas, has to be very careful. Until you get to the level of ruchi or nishta, then you have to be very, very careful how you use this principle. And you have to always be introspective and test yourself according to this, that how am I becoming attached to Krishna and detached from matter? And if the opposite thing is happening, then you have to give it up. You have to be very careful. But if you're a grihastha, then you have to be responsible at the same time. You can't, just like when in the early days, there was one devotee, he was a brahmachari, and he said to Prabhupada, I want to get married. So Prabhupada said, okay, get married. So then 3 months, his wife is pregnant. He says, I don't like this marriage. I want to renounce. I want to be sannyasi now. So Prabhupada said, no. First you were unsatisfied as a brahmachari, now you're unsatisfied as a grihastha, so what's the use of this renunciation? It's useless, it's valueless. You have to stay, you have to be responsible in some position, at least, and do service for Krishna. And so with the help of other devotees, with the sadhus, with the guru, and with honest introspection, we have to find out what is our level that we can actually serve Krishna on. And be honest about that, and work at that level, and not say that in the name of Yukta Vairagya I'm doing. Just be honest. I'm attached. I'm a grihastha. You see, the devotees are so humble. Kunti was humble. She's saying, I'm just a woman. I'm attached. I'm not meant. These teachings aren't meant for me. They're meant for the great renunciants. So the devotees' humility is the thing. And actually, we were talking about humility the other day that. One of the characteristics of humility is honesty. That you're honest about your position and what you can do for Krishna. If you can renounce, then that's very good. If that is your nature and it's the time for renunciation, not that you've got 3 kids and a household, okay, I'm going to renounce. This is not a good idea. You have to see time, place, and circumstance and your nature. And if it's not your nature, then you have to go through with grihastha life and take it up like that. But if you do it under the guidance of the guru and the devotees, then you can also make advancement, even in that position. I don't know. Does anybody else have anything? Yes. Giving it up. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is the point. From my own experience in Krishna consciousness, when you get in a difficult position, then you really have to find out what is your real shelter. What do you go for? When you're actually, this is the test too, that when you're in danger, when things are taken away, when you're having trouble in Krishna consciousness, where do you go for shelter? And you mentioned a very important shelter, and that's the devotees. That nobody should think that he's such a great devotee that he can't get help from the other devotees. And generally, devotees are very compassionate, and they'll tell you immediately if they see something that's wrong or some problem that you have. And they'll generally try to help you too. But we have to be open, as you say. We have to be open to that. That when we are actually making a mistake, we have to admit it, and then we have to take shelter of the devotees. That, I've got this problem. Well, pure devotee, someone who can help you may not need an uttama adhikari to help you in your situation. You may even a simple devotee who is sincere can give you guidance. Krishna can speak through the mouth of anyone, actually. But you have to be sure in your relationship with Krishna that that's what you want. You want Krishna, is that what you want above anything else, or is there something else? The devotees will help you, actually.
So if I go into wrong motives, it can't be that
even a pretty devotee. Yes. He won't cheat you, but you'll get the wrong message. Not that they don't want to hear, but they cannot follow the instruction. Because Prabhupada, there was one story about Prabhupada, that one Indian man, he was telling Prabhupada, oh, you please give me your order to build a temple. Give me your order. Please give me your order. Prabhupada said, no, I'm not going to give you this order. And he said, no, please give me your order. I will build a temple. Prabhupada said, no, I don't want to give you this order. And finally, the man kept saying that. Prabhupada said, if I give you this order and you don't do it, then it's an offense. See, if I give you some order you cannot do, it becomes an offense. So therefore, he's not going to give you, if you're attached like anything, he's going to tell you to take sannyas or just put on white for women. No, he's not going to tell you to do that. It has to be something that will actually help you in spiritual life. Actually, things that are good for some people are poison for others. For a renounced person, then sense gratification is poison. To go back to sense gratification, someone who's 50 years old and already has children and tell you, oh, you should go get married. And this is poison. And for a young, like I did meet, I met one young girl, 20 years old, 21, 19, something, some really young age. And some authority had told her, oh, you shouldn't get married. You should just, book distribution is your husband. And she couldn't, the worst thing was, she couldn't distribute books. She would do one a day, Anyway, these things happen sometimes. So the order has to be according to the time, place, and circumstance and the individual. Very, very important. But yes, the guru will not give you something that's inappropriate for your position. The guru will consider your psychophysical nature in giving orders. And if you're beyond that, then he can give you something that's beyond. But generally speaking, most of us aren't liberated. So therefore we have to follow our nature. So the guru will give us an order to do some service according to our nature. If we're liberated, then the guru can give us some other order. Or if it's an emergency, like when Prabhupada was here, then we were always doing things that weren't our nature. Practically everything I did in devotional service, I didn't know how to do it before, go to India. As he said, go to India. And like when I was a new devotee in Boston, I was just a bhaktin. And Satsarup, our temple president, he said, I'm sending you to Florida. Now, we were in Boston, and Florida is very far away from Boston. And he said, okay, I'm sending you, And he put us out on the road, and we had to hitchhike. And that was against my nature, to hitchhike. I would never have done that in my life. But here I was out on the road with all my possessions, which were in, we didn't have suitcases in those days, we had boxes. And we were in this, we were in yellow sheets because we didn't have saris and dhotis in those days. And we were out, quite a sight on the road here in yellow sheets with our boxes, and we were hitchhiking to Florida from Boston, which is, you know, like going from Delhi to South India, hitchhiking. Okay. Right. So, sometimes you have to do the needful, as we say. That thing that is against your nature. And in the early days, because it was such an emergency situation, then practically everything we were doing was against our nature. That we didn't have the luxury of doing things. In fact, it wasn't until I was a devotee for 24 years that I finally got to do what I felt like I wanted to do in Krishna consciousness. Like, for, what was I doing? Oh, of course, I liked it being a pujari. I was pujari for 7 years. And then I was traveling around selling books for 8 years. And then I was a mother for 7 years. And then finally, after that, I came to Vrindavan, and I said, okay, now what's my service? But I had no idea what my service was supposed to be, and nobody was telling me. So I said, okay, till I find out what my service is, I'm just going to study and read, because that's what I like to do. And so I was just sitting with the books, and after 3 months, the answer came, you're not only just supposed to sit there in your room and study and read, you're supposed to preach. So it's to share it. And so then I understood, oh, this is my service. This is very nice. It's more, of course, my nature was to read and study, but not to speak, so... Anyway, some things you have to do. What's that? You have to do. If Krishna wants you to do, then you do. Then he helps you. So, yes.
I think it's nice that it's a mindless.
Right. I was praying. I was praying, okay, just tell me what is my service. So I just went to my nature. You know, and I had no service.
So you had the space in which to do that.
Right. Yeah, everything was, my husband left me, my son went to Gurukul. I was all by myself. Finally, and you know, I never knew who I was. You know, when you get married, you kind of merge into the mind of the other person, and you don't know who's you and who's him. And because I was married for 24 years, and you just really, it's like kind. And then you have your kid, you merge into the kid, you know, and his desires are your desires, especially if you're the mother. You don't have your own desires practically. So then, when he was in school and the husband was gone, then I said, okay, who am I? You know. So then I found out what was my service to Krishna. My next service, it was number 4, 3 services before that. But whatever I was doing before, I was always reading. I was always trying to get the book and read, and because that was what I wanted to do. And then finally Krishna said, okay, you win. You can read the books now. It's your service. Read the books. Whatever service I would be doing, I'd always have the book. Pujari, anything. So anyway, Krishna, according to your nature is very, very best if the guru does that, if he knows your, understands your nature, and if he doesn't know, you can tell him, this is my nature. Because sometimes he doesn't know everything, and sometimes he does, and sometimes he doesn't, so you have to tell him. And of course, in the beginning, when you're a new devotee, then you have to surrender and wash the pots or clean the hall or whatever you have to do when you're a new bhakta. But anyway, so do you have any more question on that or comment? We were supposed to answer your question you had yesterday. You have a question? No. She had a question. Okay, anyway, she forgot it. She had a question yesterday which we didn't answer. Because we were talking about how to preach to the people in America. Now they're in this dangerous position. So we were discussing about that. Now her question was that her parents are worried about her and their devotees. So how do we preach to devotees who are worried in this dangerous situation now? All the war is coming. And even devotees get upset. So we know what to say to the materialistic people. But if you say to a devotee, you're not your body, say, okay, I already heard that. And this is my son, you know, I get a cut in my finger, my son says, anyway, it's just your karma, you deserve it. You know, so anyway, we know we've heard these things, it's our karma, it's, you know, but what do you actually say to pacify a devotee who's upset about all this paranoia? And, you know, what do you say? Like her mother's worried you're in Vrindavan. The thing that came to my mind was, I think it's more dangerous where you are than where I am, you know. She's in America, right? I said, it sounds much worse over there than here. Here it's much safer. I mean, but that's not exactly the Krishna conscious thing to say. So what would we, yes?
I guess it depends on the kind of arguments
that she has. Oh yeah, what does your mother say? A lot of devotees are afraid about India, or flying, or
more generally.
Okay. So what will you say to a devotee in this time of war? And I do meet devotees here. They're really upset. Oh, the war is coming. What am I going to do? You know, what is it all right in Vrindavan? Should I leave? Everyone was telling you not to come to India. Okay, yes? That's a very good point. You feel like you want everybody who belongs to you with you in the same place in times of danger. Yes. Yeah, you have to preach to them. That okay, this is a test of our Krishna consciousness. That now we can see, we can really test Krishna's shelter if actually we feel this solace that we need right now. We need, everyone's in a crazy state of mind, and it affects the devotees too sometimes. This paranoia, this craziness. So we could say, okay, yes, now it's time to test our faith, our shelter, how Krishna is our shelter. Yes? Okay, the sound, by sound we're together. By sound vibration, if we're doing the same things, we're together. We're all engaging in spiritual life. Anybody, you have something? Yes? Be yourself an example. Be yourself an example. Yes? So I think we have to end on this thought. It's 12:30. So Monday we'll meet again, and we'll continue with the prayers of Queen Kunti. And we're going to get more philosophical as time goes on here. Next few verses, all about how Krishna is bewildering to everyone. So over the weekend you can read verses 28 to 31. And we'll see. See you next Monday. Hare Krishna. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.